For most of the country's history, white Christian America, the cultural and political edifice built primarily by white Protestant Christians, set the tone for our national policy and shaped American ideals. But in recent decades, new immigration patterns, changing birth rates, and religious disaffiliation have transformed the U.S. When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, white Christians still comprised a majority 54% of the country. Today, white Christians make up less than half of the country. Robert Jones has written a new book entitled The End of White Christian America, where he challenges readers to grasp the profound consequences of this new reality. He is the founding CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute and a leading scholar and commentator on religion and politics. Again, the name of the book is The End of White Christian America, and we welcome Robert Jones to the roundtable this morning. Robert, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks.
What brought you to the subject?
Well, you know, I'm a social scientist that studies these big trends in American politics and religion and culture, and I realized just a few years ago that we had really passed into a new era and that no one had really talked about it that much. You know, we had census people telling us that the year 2042, we were going to be a majority, quote, minority nation, that is, we'd be a majority non-white country. But that never really seemed to explain, I think, the kind of eruptions in our politics and the visceral nature of some of the reactions. And so I began to ask the question, like, what is going on right here and now and not just on the horizon? And I realized that the country had really reached the end of an era, and that is that we had reached the end of the era of what I call in the book the era of white Christian America, that just to put, you know, some straight numbers on it, that just two election cycles ago in 2008, the country was 54% white and Christian. So if you take all white non-Hispanic Christians in the country, that is Protestant, Catholics, Orthodox, non-denominational, altogether, the country was 54% white and Christian. Today, that number is 45%. So just in the last two election cycles, we've moved from being a majority white Christian nation to being a minority white Christian nation.
As you point out in the book, though, that the seeds that are starting to grow on this and change go back further than just two election cycles.
No, that's right. We really began to see this sea change happen in the early 1990s. So if we dial it back just a little bit further, and I hope this is one of the things that the book does is really provide, you know, this long view of kind of four decades of polling data that really show this trend very carefully. And so, for example, if we look at number of people who claimed no religious affiliation, for example, in the early 1990s, those numbers were in single digits. And this is part of this transformation story, is the rise of people claiming no religious affiliation at all. That number today is 23%. So nearly a quarter of Americans today claim no religious affiliation, and most of those people came from the ranks of white Protestant and Catholic Christians.
Just give us a baseline, because you point this out in the book. For most of the country's history, white Christian America set the tone for national policy and our ideals. How did that get in place and then ultimately start to erode?
Yeah. Well, you know, it is important to remember a couple of symbolic things that'll just kind of help you. If you look at the Supreme Court, for example, 91 of the 119 justices that have ever served on the Supreme Court have been white and Protestant, right? So this is a real – every president that we've had has really – except for John F. Kennedy and Barack Obama have come from the ranks of kind of this kind of white Protestant world. So it really did have a very – not only kind of just demographic numbers, but a real control and set the tone for – our cultural conversations that provided a moral vocabulary. And, you know, even as late as the middle of the 20th century, there's a great quote in a book about this magazine called The Christian Century, which is the flagship magazine of the mainline Protestant world, that said, you know, look, if you were in charge of something big and important in the middle of the 20th century, chances were really good you were a member of a white mainline Protestant denomination. And that was still true. It's really no longer true today.
So even as we see the demographics change, do we also see, percentage-wise and incrementally, the actual voting change? In the sense of, when you see the demographics, does it also represent what we see at the ballot box?
This is an important question, especially as we're heading, you know, into the conventions and heading into the election cycle.
That's where I'm leading.
Yes. So it's a really important question. So one of the things that has hidden this reality from us, particularly for people who study just elections, is that white Protestant Christians tend to turn out at higher rates than other Americans. So what that's meant is that they have maintained a bigger edge at the ballot box than they have had in the general population, or they've had an outsized presence in the ballot box than they have in the population. So just one quick number, if you look at 2014 data, they only make up 47%. White Christians make up 47% of the population in 2014, but they made up 58% of voters. And that's really due to higher turnout rates. But having said that, we do see the same steady decline. So if we rewind the clock and we're just looking at voters, in 1992, in Bill Clinton's election, 73% of the electorate identified as white Christian. In our last presidential election in 2012, only 57% identified as white and Christian. So you can see the same pattern. It's just delayed in the voting population compared to the general population.
So what happens when you have a white Christian man versus a white Christian woman?
you're talking about the current election cycle?
I am indeed.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's complicated, right? Because, you know, Donald Trump doesn't really fit, I think, the typical kind of person you would see at the top of the Republican ticket. You know, so he comes from, in fact, his affiliation is Presbyterian, which comes from the mainline, the more liberal mainline Protestant world. And even there, he claimed a membership in Marble Collegiate Church in New York. Marble Collegiate Church very quickly put out a statement saying we don't have any record of him being an active member here. So it's a very conflicted thing. Now, the other complicating factor is that on the Republican side of politics, this tends to matter more. Religious identity and appeals to religious voters has traditionally mattered more. Mostly that's because that in the Republican Party, you have this very core base of white evangelical Christians for whom this is really important.
I understand that, but when you have a candidate in this case who is who does not align himself politically, morally with the Christian right, then what does that do to that electorate, putting them in a camp of saying, okay, then do you want to vote for the liberal white Christian woman?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I think for many conservative white Christians, there has been something of a dilemma. It's, in fact, split the evangelical leadership. You know, so you have a kind of whole group of people, James Dobson, Franklin Graham, Mike Huckabee, who have lined up to support Donald Trump. And then you have another group of people, Russell Moore at the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the largest evangelical denomination strongly opposing Donald Trump. So it's really created something of a dilemma. However, we have seen throughout the primaries that this dilemma has really played out more in the terms of the leadership than it has in rank-and-file evangelicals. I mean, Donald Trump handily won Super Tuesday with all of its deep southern states, where some of the electorates, like South Carolina, was nearly 7 in 10 GOP primary voters were white evangelical Protestants. Here's what I think is going on, though, I've written and I've argued that Donald Trump, in subsequent pieces, I don't mention Trump in the book, but I've argued that one of the things going on is that Donald Trump has converted what were self-described values voters into what I'm describing as nostalgia voters. And he saw this early on in Iowa, for example. He gave a speech where he said, look, to an evangelical college, he said, if you elect me as president, I'm going to restore power to the Christian churches. We're not going to be saying happy holidays. We're going to be saying Merry Christmas in this country again. And this real direct appeal to kind of restoring this world that many conservative white Christian Americans feel has been passing from the scene.
First of all, do we believe that?
We'll have to wait and see, I think. But what the evidence that we have, and there was just polling that came out just this week, showing, nearly 8 in 10 white evangelical Protestants in the general population supporting Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. So it looks that about 8 in 10 evangelicals are taking him at his word and lining up behind him.
Okay, so one of the other things that I want to talk about that's in the book that I find really interesting, and that is this white Christian America and this post-white Christian American era you write could have a real effect on the churches as far as desegregation. And that, when you look at what is happening in the churches that remain largely segregated, you believe that this could change, and could change fairly rapidly.
Yeah, well, it's first important to this last point you made is exactly right, that, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. was famous for saying that 11 a.m. on Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in American life. And that largely remains true today. About 90% of American churches are essentially monoracial churches, and that covers about 80% of church-going Americans. So there's this kind of great divide here. But one of the things that I think will happen is that I think at least could happen is that as white Protestant churches become, you know, less the majority and more the minority, really to get things done, they're going to need to be less kind of unilateral and more multilateral. So they're going to need partners. They're going to need people to build coalitions with. And I think that itself is going to begin to kind of maybe bring down some of these barriers and at least provide some opportunities and some incentives for some new kinds of bridges to be built.
When you look at where we are now, and you mentioned over election cycles, and I asked the question a moment ago about if we're going to see this and these changes, that they're going to come fairly rapidly. What do you make of the quickness that we move? And it doesn't mean that the change is everlasting, because we could move back, right? We could move back to a white Christian America.
Well, it's always possible, but man, there would have to be a reversal of some pretty sturdy trends that we've been seeing now for, you know, that really have been moving for four decades. There's a couple reasons why I would be very reluctant to say that seems likely to me. One is this trend among the unaffiliated is robust. It's very pronounced among younger people. And, you know, you can always ask the question, well, when younger people get married, they have kids, will they come back to religious organizations to kind of provide religious education for their kids? But even if that happens, it's worth noting that this generation is starting off as the most unaffiliated generation that we have ever seen. So even if some proportion of that comes back, they will still remain the most unaffiliated group in the country. The other thing is that there's now enough of those people, and we have evidence now that they're actually seeking each other out as marriage partners, so that we're having unaffiliated people marrying unaffiliated people. And when that happens, there's not really that tie from either partner to go back to a religious institution. So dialing the clock back, you combine that with lower birth rates among whites and immigration patterns. All of the things point to these trends actually continuing into the future.
Robert Jones is the founding CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute, a nonpartisan organization dedicated to research on politics, culture, and religion. He also writes a column for The Atlantic online on politics, culture, and religion. The name of the book is The End of White Christian America. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Robert Jones, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate your expertise.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The End of White Christian America by Robert Jones. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.